Okay, it's 9 o'clock. Welcome to the W3C community group call. Our agenda today is on this email. Welcome back from a break due to the U.S. holidays. So we haven't met for 3 weeks. A quick agenda review. Today we're going to be talking about the DID key method in the bulk of our conversation, and then we go through some regular business at the beginning of the call. Is there any essential new agenda item that we would like to have? I'm not seeing anything yet. Okay. So an IP note, anyone can participate in these CCG calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be from members of the CCG that have signed the IPR agreements. You can join the CCG at this URL. If you haven't yet, I encourage you to do so. That allows you to fully participate. Some call notes, these minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived. For instance, you can see previous meetings at URLs like these. So these are the previous meetings. We use IRC to queue speakers during the call. I'm hoping that you're on IRC now. If you're not, please go to the CCG site to get the URL to go to the CCG channel on W3C. All attendees should type present plus to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. While we're in IRC, we use Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder. So you could say Q plus to mention something, but you have to remember to in that Q plus space T-O, and that will help you remind you what it is you wanted to talk about if the queue gets long. If for some reason you're not in IRC, please just speak briefly to be added to the queue. When it's your turn, please be brief so the rest of the queue will have a chance to chime in. You can always queue plus again. Finally, this meeting is essentially held by voice, not by our IRC. We ask that off-topic IRC comments be minimized, and if they're off-topic, we may delete them from the record. The idea is to keep a single thread of conversation. IRC's goal is to help us with things like URLs and other stuff that voice is not good with, and of course for the scribe. So our next step is the scribe. I'm seeking a volunteer for the scribe. It's been a while. Everybody should be hopefully available. Does anybody want to volunteer? Or do we go to the list? Okay, so I don't see the first couple of people on our scribe list. Nope. Kalia, are you around today? Nope, I don't see her. Seeking volunteers for scribing. We have a lot of people that aren't on. Tall Ted, are you up for scribing today? Mike Lauder? Jonathan, are you available? Dimitri.
Mm-hmm.
We need a volunteer. I'm kind of going one by one. We'll add you to the end of the scribes list if you volunteer, so you won't be asked again for a while. Adrian.
I can do it.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you very much. Okay, so continuing down through the agenda, introductions and reintroductions. Do we have anyone who is new to this call for the first time who would like to introduce themselves? I'm not seeing anybody replying. Matt, are you on the call today? No. Too many windows. Marcus, why don't you reintroduce yourself?
Yes, sure. Hello, I'm Marcus Abadillo. I live in Vienna, Austria. I'm founder of a small startup called Danube Tech here. I've been involved with the work on decentralized identifiers basically since the first few rebooting Web of Trust events. I'm now one of the co-editors of the DID specification and doing some implementation work on this as well.
Thank you, Marcus. We move on to announcements and reminders. So the master list is here, although it's not been touched for a few weeks, so I think there's some new things. The key thing here at this point is that we are not going to be meeting between Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. So so once again, we're going to have a two-week break between meetings at the end of December. And I think we got our plans for today off on here, but we're going to try to, predict what our future meetings will be. We have regular DID resolution calls on Thursdays. Marcus, are there any days that you are not meeting this month?
So we have skipped those calls the last few weeks. We're going to have the call again this week. We have not discussed whether we want to skip them again this month, but I assume probably perhaps on the 26th or and maybe the 2nd as well. We've not actually decided yet.
Okay. So just also as general news, the chairs are reaching out to some of the stalled work item projects to ask them to either move to the next milestone or, at least make some progress, or potentially we may move them off of our active work items list because they're just not making progress. So want to let everybody know about that in general. And then I wanted to let people know to please hold the date of March 16th through 20th for the next rebooting Web of Trust. I hope to have some announcements in the next by the end of the week. But if you're interested in participating in rebooting Web of Trust in March, it's March 16th through 20th in Buenos Aires, Argentina. So hope that some of you can make it. Any other announcements? I'm not seeing anything in the queue. Okay, so progress on action items. We use GitHub to track what it is that we're doing. So this is the review next for GitHub. So we have four items we wanted to talk about, sort of relevant to a conversation at the beginning of this call. You know, we've been having some difficulties. We have some instructions for how to use SIP to communicate, and I know I've had problems with it. This is issue 87. In particular, when I was in Europe, I tried using, you know, an iPhone SIP client. I tried using a Mac SIP client, and I was not able to get on the call. So I'd really like to have a volunteer to help us define, you know, a couple of procedures or volunteers for how to make SIP work for phone calls, especially from overseas. So I know we have Mac and iPhone as the requirements. If you also are having problems getting on this call using SIP and are not using a Mac or an iPhone, so you're using an Android phone or whatever, and would like help with that, please add that as a requirement in this issue. Do we have any volunteers who would be interested in maybe helping us document this better, and what's, you know, the best way to be able to get on these calls from remotely using SIP? So we have a volunteer, Briaro. So I will add you to it, but, you know, it doesn't have to be one person. But I will, you know, add her to, let's see, to as one of the people for that task. Why isn't it not assigning RHI? There we go. Okay, so back to the active things. There is an action item which has Manu and Dan on it, renaming the VCWG maintenance mode GitHub repo. Manu, Dan, do you have any progress on that? This is the, we've agreed to maintain information and try to build consent around items that will be approved by hopefully new VCWG maintenance group.
Yeah, I'm reading it. I'm trying to, trying to figure out exactly what the action item is. The action item, as stated, doesn't make any sense to me. Name the VCWG maintenance mode GitHub repository presumes that
we don't
there's only one work item. Maybe what you mean is like we need a place to track things.
Yep.
Okay.
We need
our
repo or
okay.
something.
Let me. Okay. I can create that right now. So let me do that.
Thank you. We're going to be talking about the DID key method, so I'm going to skip that one in a minute and then go to the last review next item, which is the web KMS. So we have two proposed work items. There is the DID key, which we're going to be talking about today, and there's also web KMS. So if you've here's the web KMS one. Nope, almost typed the wrong one. This is the web KMS one. So please, you know, get your comments, thoughts on having these be an official work item, any other requirements or other stuff, and we will be scheduling a call on web KMS. Or if we have some extra time today, we may talk about it today, but I think this will be a decently long call. So that's our action items. Are there any action items that other people would like to say hey, I finished this action item, so we can celebrate, or an action item that needs to be added to the community? Okay. So I encourage people to take a look at and use this community repo where we're using issues to track the work of the community. So that's the four for today that we wanted to go through. So now we go to the primary discussion of the call, which is proposal to add DID key as a CCG work item. So the proposal's here, and right now it does meet the minimum criteria of a work item, which is that we have a proposal, an abstract, and we have interest from other organizations, but we don't have formally my ideal would be that another organization also wishes to be one of the leaders of this particular thing. So let me know over this call if you're interested in joining the proposers as leads on this work item. So the actual method text is at this URL, DID method key. Manu, do you want to take over? You can also manage the queue if you like for this this section and talk about DID method key. So.
Sure. Sorry, I'm just finishing up creating that repository. Maintenance repository is created. Okay, so DID key. This was the request to work on DID key was raised in issue 98. And then there was an email that went out to the mailing list. Fundamentally, what DID key is it's an attempt to create the simplest DID method you could possibly create. So effectively, it's a self-asserting DID, meaning that you can, just by having the DID, expand it into a fully functional DID document without needing to go out to a blockchain, without needing to go out to a web server, without needing to go out to the network at all. It's a pure algorithmic way of taking a DID and converting it to a DID document. DID key is useful for use cases that are kind of like short-term interactions that require you to use some kind of cryptographic mechanism to exchange information. So for example, let's say that I wanted to create a pairwise relationship with another entity, and I wanted that pairwise relationship to only last a small bit of time. I would probably end up using a DID key to do that, give the other person my DID key, they give me their DID key, and then based on that, we can bootstrap into some form of encrypted communication, or we'd be able to digitally sign messages or documents such that the other person knows that the message hasn't been tampered with in transit. The DID method is super simple in that the only operations that it supports is basically create and read. You cannot update it. You cannot deactivate it. So that means that it is not a good use. You should not be using the DID method if there's some kind of long-term relationship you want to create. Instead, you should kind of upgrade to something more long-lived, like DID peer or DID Veris 1 or DID Sovereign or DID BTCR or one of the other kind of ledger-based mechanisms. And that's pretty much it. The specification itself, you can read it here. I put the link in IRC. Again, fairly simple and straightforward. I think what we need at this point to have it be an official work item is we need another editor on the specification, which, by the way, should be a fairly easy job because the spec is pretty much complete as is. We may need to do little things here and there. But we need another editor from another organization in order to pick this up as a work item that we've moved through this group. And that's pretty much it. I don't know if there are any questions or concerns. There have been a couple of ones raised on the mailing list. We can take those, or if somebody else, you know, has questions, I'm happy to try and answer those now.
I'll defer to Marcus. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to say when this topic came up originally, deeds that were simply keys, that there was some discussion where those identifiers should be considered deeds, right? Initially, all four operations were mandatory, including update and deactivate, and then there was some discussion to change that, to make the update of the deactivate function optional, which then happened. So there was a good discussion around that, and I think there was consensus to change that and to enable these type of deeds that don't require those operations. So I think it's totally worth doing that. I think it's a great did method. Just wanted to point out that originally deeds were, that there were some opinions that deeds have to have this abstraction layer, right? And that deeds have to have a way of changing contents of the deed document without changing the identifier. But like I said, there was good discussion around that, and those operations are now optional. And I agree, this is a very useful deed method for certain scenarios.
Okay, one second. Sorry, and then after. So I'm a little confused on a couple of different things. You have in there a DID document that is derived from that single key, which is basically expanding out that key many, many, many different times in many different ways. And you're basically giving that key all authority. So it can authenticate, it can assert, it can do capabilities, it can do key agreements, et cetera. Are there any ways to construct, I mean, I'm just, as a cryptographer, this is just like a really, really broad thing, and I'd almost rather see, you know, an expression of you give a DID key value, and then you immediately include a DID document that is signed by that DID key, and they must be, you know, sent together so that you can be explicit about how you want that key to be used by the other party. I don't know. I'm a little confused here. And then, Manu, any thoughts on that?
Sure. I put myself on the queue to respond. Jonathan, you're up next.
So how did she create the document? Like, how do you retrieve it, resolve it, or pass it to the recipient?
Got it. Okay, so I'm on the queue to respond. Let me take, Jonathan, your question first. There is an algorithm in the specification that defines how you take a DID key and expand it to the DID document. So the expansion is purely algorithmic. Basically, a DID key is the method specific identifier for it is an encoding of the public key itself. So for example, for like ED25519, it's just 32 bytes. And with those 32 bytes, that's all you need to actually automatically generate the entire DID document. So you can take those 32 bytes and you can expand it out into a full-blown DID document that meets the DID spec. So that's effectively how you resolve. You don't have to hit a resolver. You can do the second you see the DID key, specific DID key identifier, you can automatically convert it to a DID document. No resolver necessary. To go to Christopher's question, yes, we basically take those 32 bytes and we expand it out into to basically have full authority for authentication, for issuing verifiable credentials, for creating and invoking capabilities, for doing key agreement for like curve 255.19 type encrypted exchanges. It's one key that affects, one key to rule them all, right, within that DID document. There are mechanisms we did consider, Christopher, well, what if you were to then take the DID document and then do a digital signature over it and modify it? But that kind of, it makes it more complex. And we were trying to go for the simplest DID method that's useful. Two, that's kind of sort of what DIDpeer is trying to do. DIDpeer is trying to do a lot more, but that concept I think is pretty firmly embedded in DIDpeer, and since there was another DID method doing that, we didn't see the need for us to do that in DIDkey. And we had a very long discussion with the DIDpeer folks about whether or not DIDkey and DIDpeer, how much overlap there was. And at the end of the day, where we landed was, if you want to do the types of things that you want to do, Christopher, or what you outlined, DIDpeer is probably a better mechanism to do that than DIDkey. And the other metric that we used on what makes this DIDpeer and what makes DIDkey DIDkey and what makes DIDpeer that is that DIDpeer does not it doesn't have a history. It doesn't require any signature checks or anything to do the resolution. It is just it's simple and that's it. There's no updating, no rotating, no revoking. You have full authority with the key. And because of that, you should be careful where you use DID keys, right? So you shouldn't use them in systems where you need long-term trust. And there are mechanisms that you can use to take a DID peer and convert it to a DID peer or convert it to a DID verse one thing. So that's kind of the background there. Like, yes, as a cryptographer, using these things long-term should not make you feel good, but they're not designed for that. They're meant for short-term pairwise interactions and a super simple DID method that just about anybody can implement. And demonstrate, the ecosystem working with this DID method. Okay, and that's it.
Okay, Kim, you're next in queue.
Yeah, I wanted to ask some follow-up questions from the mailing list that intrigued me. I'll include a link if people want to follow along. So one was from Ori, and he was asking about the idea of multiple key representations, and the other one was a candidate for, I thought might be an interesting candidate for co-editor. Oliver had mentioned there's a DID method called DID, I don't know how to pronounce it, NACL, and he said it sounded very similar, and so if he could be a co-editor and if that could kind of solve the scenarios they were getting at UPort as well, that would be interesting. So I'm basically looking for a high-level summary of whether we have closure on those two issues.
Okay, Marcus.
I'd be fine if Manu wanted to respond first to that.
I'll just queue it up. Go ahead, Marcus.
Okay, just had a very small comment on terminology. Manu said that no resolver was required for this, I would just say that it's still a resolver if you take this kind of key deed and expand it into a deed document. It's just a super trivial resolver. But in the deed resolution spec, for example, it says that resolution is a very broad concept. It says that in order to resolve a deed to a deed document, there should be no assumption that the document is stored somewhere. There should be no assumption that a ledger or blockchain is involved, and there should be no assumption that any kind of interaction with a remote network should be involved. So just a small comment. It's still resolution. It's just a very, very trivial form of resolution.
Yep, agreed. Christopher, you're up next.
Yeah, so again, you know, as you already addressed DID peer discussion, there's also DID Git, which does some simple things. And then I also wanted to ask about, you have a fairly strong dependence on kind of the, you know, using the IPFS style key representations, but is the intent that, I mean, we still don't have a process for how new key types are added to that. So, Manu, go ahead.
Sure. So let me take these one at a time. So Kim asked, what about did NACL in different key representations, which is kind of sort of what the question you asked. Christopher. So did NACL, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same did method. The only thing that's difference between did NACL and did key is the encoding format for the key. And so I think I would be a super plus one to Oliver co-editing on the specification if he's up for it. That would be great. I think both did methods are trying to do the same thing. The only difference is how we encode information. Okay, so that's did NACL. As far as and plus one to Oliver as co-editor, to kind of focus on the different key representations and IPFS style key expression. So to be clear, we're using the did key spec today uses multi-codec to identify the type of public key. And the reason we did that is because it's a compact key expression mechanism. So we hope in time for there to be identifiers for RSA public keys, ED25519, SecP26K1, SecP26R1, and Curve 25519. Basically, we need to, as many different public key types as they are, we need to support those. And multi-codec specifically allows us to express all of those key types just using like one or two bytes, right? So super simple way to encode it. We're doing the base encoding in multi-base. So this is actually a multi-base encoded, multi-codec identified public key. So for did keys, it is possible that you could express an RSA public key, all 4,096 bits of it. It would be a gigantic did key thing, but it'd be there. Whoever's coughing, we can hear you.
Yeah, can you mute? Sorry, you've got a cold.
Yeah. So we can express, the RSA one, we can express ED255 and SecP26K1. So we should be able to express, did key should be able to express all the popular public key formats that there are. So that's the answer to the, what about different key representations. Adding to multi-codec is as simple as doing a PR, I'm the editor of the multi-base and multi-hash specs at ITF, the independent drafts, and I'm playing around with doing a multi-codec one as well. it would probably have to be done at some point. It's just not a, you know, it's not super critical. We can actually express the values in the DID key spec and be totally fine with just expressing it there. But it's work that we should do. There was one other point that I think, I wanted to say that Marcus is totally right. We still do require resolution. It's just you don't need to go out to a network to resolve, and you don't need to look at a CRDT or any other kind of history to do resolution. That's what makes DIDKey different from DIDPeer. For DIDGit, the thing that makes it different is you don't, one, have to go out to the network and get a document off of the network. You don't have to check a signature on that document. And so on and so forth. So again, it's the simplest possible useful DID method. And I think those were all the questions that I could remember.
Yeah, so you're using multi-base and multi-codec, but you know, theoretically there could be other non-key cryptographic proofs. Or you know, other different types of things where somebody can use it to, you know, verify a signature rather than actually using the public key to verify the signature. It was, you know, is there any thoughts about that?
If the key, we're pretty flexible on different types of interesting cryptographic keys that could be tacked on to the end there. Because we're using multi-codec for extensibility, if something were to come along like a post-quantum key format that's fairly compact, or I mean even just a regular post-quantum key format that's like 4 megabytes in size, we could actually express that using DIDKey. The same thing for some kind of funky cryptographic circuit-based, you know, key mechanism. You know, we can add that after the fact to DIDKey without having to change the spec at all. The only thing that we'd have to do is just add a new key type, a public key type, to the multi-codec table, and that's it. That's all we need to do to support some of these, you know, really new cryptographic, public cryptographic key mechanisms.
Yeah. I'm kind of enamored, actually, of Guy Longley's DID Simple or something of that nature. But anyhow, the other question I had for you was just sort of in the area of, you know, talking about this at a higher level. You know, is there a risk that, you know, having this be one of the first methods out there, that too many people use it improperly, et cetera? So maybe, you know, we should be doing things like say in there, you know, which maybe it's DID one use key. Like, never use this key again. You use it once, you do something with it, but then you never use it again. Or something of that nature. I worry that there's a little bit of a risk here that this could be misused if we're not careful. Let's see, look at the queue. Yeah, DID temp. Jonathan, go ahead.
Yeah, just to address Marcus's point, which is that it's still neither a resolving service or an algorithmic way to expand it in a deterministic way, and so and even like I still struggle. I get different results from different JSON parsers, and just the example that Ori gave for the Christmas card. Holiday greetings, like, you know, the different parsers got a different, so it is heavily relying on the algorithmic expansion. Although I have to say that I do like multi-base, multi-codec approach. But it is going to be hard to keep the multi-codec table updated to support all these. That would be the bottleneck.
Sure. So to speak to the, you know, deterministic algorithm, the deterministic algorithm is outlined in section 3.1. So, and it's pretty simple. It's like you take the public key and then you just expand, you know, you expand it, put it everywhere the public key identifier goes. There is an interesting kind of expansion for the Curve 255.19 stuff that, by the way, is not formally proven yet, but people are fairly certain it's going to work, and people are working on a formal proof for it. But fundamentally, like, the algorithm exists. It's in Section 3.1, and it's deterministic, right? As far as, you know, people misimplementing it or misusing it, yes. Like, I think we should expect that even if we put did temp or did one-time use or whatever on this did method, someone somewhere is going to use it for the wrong purposes, keep it around for years and continue using it for years, just all kinds of badness that comes from it. I think the way to address that, one, of course, is to write enough about it in the privacy and security consideration section. Two, when people do implementations, tell people to, like, warn when a did key is created, like, hey, by the way, you're playing with fire, like, it's useful for, you know, this is what it's useful for, do not use it for these other purposes. And just make sure that implementers, you know, do a good job of warning people. And then, you know, there are systems that people are building. Like, for example, our organization's building systems that utilize did key, and we're not going to be allow them to be used for certain things. Like, you cannot use them. I'm pretty sure we're basically going to say you cannot create a public-facing did profile using did key. It's used in the background, and it's specifically, it's the software that knows that it's doing a pairwise interaction, and it will use a did key to do that pairwise interaction. So we're not giving, like, individuals, end users, control over whether or not they can create a did key. We're only doing it in parts of the system where it's safe to do it, and protecting, you know, the customers from doing the wrong thing there. So I think, yes, absolutely, like, this did method and many of the other did methods are going to be abused or misused, and we can't prevent that wholesale, but what we can do is provide some guidance to folks. That's it.
But is, yeah.
I know, I'd like to...
Approach is, so I'm just stuffing into every public where public key is supposed to be placed, I don't think it satisfies me that it's deterministic.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some weird things. Like, I know I would, the one place I would like to see it used is with HD keys. So in Bitcoin, you can have a 512-bit pub key. It's very, very common. And then it can basically derive millions of subkeys given that information. And so you have to point to the specific subkey, and there's a standard for doing that. So that you can basically point to which of the many keys that only the private key can actually derive, but anybody can verify, you know, is a powerful function. Because then literally you can give everybody a different key, but you're not, you know, keeping lots of private keys. You can give everybody a different derived public private key pair. And then I do want to speak to, I am worried a little bit about the name. You know, key is a strong word in our community. Keys have a bad tradition of being long-term and long-time use, multiple uses, et cetera. So, you know, I'd almost like to see a little bit of, you know, consideration of, you know, temp key or ephemeral key, or I don't know, you know, something that implies that you know, this is not, you know, a long-term key or something that's supposed to be reused or whatever in the root of the name. But anyhow, just that's a suggestion. See what else has been to you, Manu. Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, we can, you know, rename the identifier to did temp or something like that. I think that's a part, you know, that only happens when we, you know, choose to pick this up as a work item. The other, you know, concern around, like, oh, it's going to be really hard to keep up with all the different types of public keys. Maybe, right? Let's start with something simple, like three different formats. Let's start with ED255-19, SECP256-K1, and SECP256-R1. Start there. It doesn't mean that we end there. And then get, you know, an interop a test suite together that tests those things, and then we can expand to HD keys or, you know, post-quantum keys or whatever after that. I don't think we have to solve all these problems, you know, today to end up picking this up as a work item. And that's it.
Marcus?
Yeah, regarding the comment on emphasizing the temporary nature of those deeds, I suppose you could theoretically build an expiration date into the deed itself, after which it would be considered deactivated, or the key would be considered expired or something like that. But of course, it would make the syntax more complex. I'm not sure if it's worth it.
So to clarify that, you're thinking that the DID itself would have, a Unix date added to it or something of that nature. So it would be longer, but it would basically say, don't use this after this point, and it would be bound to the DID. Is that kind of your wild? I mean, I'm not proposing it. I'm just trying. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Right, it would be part of the identifier itself, right? So the identifier would contain the key and some additional syntax for also expressing expiration date, and then during the trivial resolution process when a DID document is constructed, then either that DID document itself would contain a flag that says that the key is expired, or the resolution process would treat it as a deactivated DID, so it would not return it. Document at all.
Okay, that's interesting. Kim, you're next. Oh, you want to kick off?
I'm sorry
step.
About
so we
that.
We do need another person.
Yes. Okay, yeah, that's true. I guess we need another person. I think I was sort of leaning towards where Manu was going. It seems like we're starting to actually do the work of this, you know, discussions like naming and everything. So I was going, before we ran out of time, I was going to mention if we need to do the 1 week notice, but I don't know if we need to, find that other person before then. It did sound like from the mailing list there was interest. So just wanted
so
to flag
me,
that.
Yeah, so let me be clear here. The chairs prefer to have a multi-company, multiple parties supporting something as a work item. It is not an absolute requirement. Consensus is not required for a work item. We would prefer that there weren't violent objections. We do this to make, we put this little bit of barrier in here for work items to make sure that it gets done. So, what I'm going to basically say, ask, Manu is, we can go ahead and approve this, but we really want to see more input. We'd like to see some of these questions, at least addressed in the design document in some fashion of, that. As you progress. And do you have an idea of when we can when you think you've circulated enough around and such that you might be able to, you want to target this for six months, a year, by the end of 2020? What's kind of your target to say, hey, we're done. Manu, go ahead.
Sure. So what I can do is reach, David Chadwick said that he'd volunteer to be an editor, and I think Oliver kind of sort of did as well. So I can just confirm via email with them, and if they agree, put them on as co-editors on the specification to make sure that we have a multi-company or multi-organization thing going on here. I think that addresses the first concern. The second concern was, you know, are we going to address the things that were raised on the call today? You know, absolutely, right? That's why we're putting this through a community process. And we'll try to raise issues on the spec repo to track these concerns and continue working on them. And then as far as, you know, timeline, I mean, my hope is like 6 months. Like, this shouldn't be, you know, famous last words, but this shouldn't be difficult. You know, it's a fairly, it's a very, very minimally scoped spec, and for at least a version one, I think we should be able to do that in 6 months. So yeah, I think that's kind of the expectation. As far as, you know, has it had enough circulation? I think it's had enough circulation already, meaning it went out to the community group. There's been discussion on the mailing list. There's discussion today. There's discussion in the issue trackers. And, you know, and as a result, I'd like it to be picked up by the CCG as soon as possible. And that's it.
David, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. My interest in this is that in our verifiable credentials implementation, we are using a key ID as the subject ID. So we do need some way of specifying a key as a URI in a standard format. And so I hooked onto DID key when Dave Longley said he was doing that spec, because I saw that would be one way of solving our problem. So that's why I was happy to participate in editing the document to make it fit the requirements that we have for an ephemeral key to be a subject ID in a verifiable credential that is short-lived and not revocable. So that's where I'm coming from. Those are my requirements.
Would you be interested in co-editing, David, the spec?
Yeah, sure. Not a problem, yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, consensus isn't required for this. We don't need a 7-day. We just need the approval of the chairs. Joe, are you on today? Okay, well, the chairs will confirm things, but, you know, we'll let you know this week. So we'll
I am on, Chris. I was just in the other room and had to come back to unmute. I think it has plenty of support. I would like to get someone else on, but I think we've got that. So I think we can approve it today.
Kim? Okay, Kim also.
Yes.
So,
In particular, Chris, because this is the beginning of a work item, I don't think we need the 7-day notice. That's for consensus at the finishing of a work item.
Yep. Okay, so the chairs confirm that this is a work item. We can do whatever's required to move the repo appropriately and add it to the various work item lists. So thank you very much for submitting this work item, and we're looking forward to seeing the final product in 6 months or so. I'm going to keep on pushing on that. Okay, so we have about 7 minutes, which I don't think is enough time to bring up the next work item. Does anybody have like a very short thing they would like to talk about or whatever in our 6 minutes left? Or should we just call it a little early? Okay, so kind of on our longer term agenda, and we're seeking kind of volunteers for help. We have this sort of other community group repo that we not just, well, it's a community group technically, but we run it, which is the Digital Verification Community Group, DVCG. The chairs are really challenged with trying to manage the flow of both, and there's some confusion things and some things are getting old there. So we're in the coming weeks going to formally, you know, propose default, you know, getting rid of those, that community group, archiving all of the information there, and moving those that are applicable to be into the CCG. So that's a future topic. There are some CCG has a charter description that is a couple of years old. We've talked about updating it. We have kind of formally approved a new mission statement, but not the rest of the kind of rules that are in the CCG charter. We want to get that updated. So if you're interested in helping us with some of these kind of process items, it's a great way to show your leadership in the community, and you know, we're really looking for some help from some people to help, you know, lead us through, you know, closing out some of these sort of procedural items and discussions. The nice thing about them is that, you know, we can maybe do them in a month or two and be done, and you can say, hey, you know, I led the team that redid the charter, or I led the team that, you know, moved all of these documents into the workflow for the CCG. So if you're interested in helping out with some of these procedural things, I think it's a great way to show your support in the group. So bragging rights. Because the chairs right now are just keeping up. So we need help with those kind of big short-term items. Kim or Joe, do you have any comments before we close the call today?
I can say, so next week we will be doing we'll be focusing on a proposed task force for academic credentials using verifiable credentials format. So the agenda will be coming out soon, and sort of the charter and all of that. But yeah, we'll be going over that next week.
Yeah, and I had an item, okay, Chris. Yeah. I actually put myself on the queue, so I don't know if anyone else hopped on the queue that you might have missed. But did we talk about the EDV call that's continuing? So we have another one on Friday, the encrypted data vaults.
No, we have not. That did not come up in the announcements. So
yeah,
do somebody want to put the URL for the call for that second call? So before the Thanksgiving break, we had a call convening a variety of different groups and people from those groups to talk about encrypted data vaults and how we could work together on them. So we had people from DIF, people from Hyperledger, a few others. We had some consensus on what the work should be. What's kind of remaining are, you know, where should we do the work? And I think there are a couple of other items. There were 75 people on the call, which I thought was pretty amazing to show the support for doing encrypted data vaults. But I also felt like we were missing entire communities. I didn't see anybody from the solid community there, or at least not the core of the solid community. And they're doing encrypted data vaults. I didn't see anybody from IPFS who, that's their entire business model. So, you know, I would really like to see some more people there. And there's discussion of where is this work going to be hosted. So if you're interested, I encourage you to come to this Friday's call.
Christopher, this is Dimitri. I just wanted to add real quick that there was definitely solid representation on that call.
Okay.
And there's going to be more going forward.
Okay, cool. So if people can, you know, if there are any people with contacts in the IPFS community that might care about, the encrypted side of IPFS and architectures, please, you know, recommend that they come to this call, because we're going to be making some decisions about, you know, where is this work going to happen? What is the structure of? We're not going to be doing tech on that in that call. It's more about the process and structure. So you know, if you've got concerns about that, be there. Okay, so it's 10 o'clock. Thank you much, everybody. Good call. Thank you for being a member of this community.